Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Mahan. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as being one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening on Elevated Places, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black man and woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091. Or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Good evening. Welcome to Ask Dr. Ava. This is her co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad. We want to welcome you here. Dr. Ava will be on shortly, so that doesn't mean that you got to run away because it's just me, but we want to make sure that you please tune in to Ask Dr. Ava, our weekly talk, blog talk radio show. And to all the callers, we want you to call in at 347-324-5091. That's 347-324-5091. And once again, you're on Ask Dr. Ava, and this is her co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, and we'll be hearing from her in just a few minutes, and we will also be joined shortly by that elevated contributor, Dr. Ridgely Mookman Muhammad, down on the farm. And matter of fact, I do believe he's on. Welcome to Ask Dr. Ava, Dr. Ridgely.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you.
Alaykum salam. How are you today?
I'm fine. Praise be to Allah. Just waiting to go to work here. So get it started so we can go to work.
Yes, sir. Well, we're thankful for another week, and we will tonight on Ask Dr. Ava, as we always say. Matter of fact, don't forget to follow Dr. Ava at Dr. Ava Muhammad. That's on Twitter, at Dr. Ava Muhammad, and she also has her Facebook page and Instagram. So we want to make sure that you are following her, and we want to make sure that if you have any questions, to go ahead and tweet Dr. Ava, and we may be able to get one of your questions on the air tonight, as well as please tune in every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern to WVON, The Voice of Chicago, 1690. I want to make sure that you listen to her every Sunday. Last Sunday was powerful, and you can get your iHeart app, and so you can hear it on your cell phone. So we want to make sure that you tune in every Sunday, WVON at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern. And Dr. Ridgely, I'm not sure if you caught it. If you didn't, it was a powerful, powerful lecture by our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Excuse me. You think I wouldn't catch that, brother? I was up in the house. I was right there looking at it, but that was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, if you didn't understand Mr. Farrakhan before, she made you understand the value of Venice of Farrakhan.
Yes, she did. And, you know, one of the things that we always have to uplift and remember is that, you know, Dr. Ava was once a prosecutor, you know, a prosecuting attorney in the state of New York. And so she knows how to deliver and argue a case. And in the court of law, you don't necessarily have to use emotion. People bring in their litigation, their facts, their evidence, and she definitely knows how to deliver a case in the defense the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, so he doesn't have to come out and tell you who he is and why he is doing what he's doing. The minister does have those that are in good scholarly stance to defend him, and she did an excellent job, a beautiful job of defending him this past Sunday at our national headquarters, Mosque Maryam. And as I heard a voice come through, excellent defender, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, his national spokesperson, your host of the show tonight, as Dr. Ava. So I'm going to turn it right back over to her. Welcome to your show.
Well, thank you, my beloved co-host. And it's great to be at your show and Dr. Ridge's show and the team and the caller's show, because I was just coming back. I really did have an urgent matter, but I thank Allah it's not nearly as horrific as it could have been. It wasn't good, but you know, we're all still breathing here in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
But if you are not, I don't think you got into your announcements yet, so I'm happy to bounce it back over to you. Just, of course, Ferguson is on the agenda this evening, and also international events are on our plate this evening. Talking with Dr. Ridgely earlier, you know, we have to remember that the United States is really at peak bully mode around the globe. And a lot that is occurring domestically is also occurring internationally, and vice versa. That which is going on overseas is taking place here. And so everything the Holy Quran and Bible spoke of, all the signs that we were told to look for, and in fact, I shouldn't use the word signs, events that are showing us that we are actually in the Day of Judgment. But we're going to get into that tonight. And Allah willing, Brother Ashad Muhammad, who is also part of the Elevated Places team and is the assistant editor of the Final Call newspaper, as well as an investigative reporter and blogger in his own right, will be joining us. He was in Ferguson over the weekend, along with the editor of the Final Call newspaper, Brother Richard Muhammad, and others. We had Minister Abdul Akbar Muhammad on last week. He was on my show Sunday here in Chicago to report in from the ground. And the actual facts are stunningly different from what the media is reporting. The lies are stunning in terms of their magnitude. But Brother Terrence, I want to give it back to you first to do your announcement, sir.
Well, I just got to thank you, because, you know, I didn't do my due diligence to ascertain or galvanize as much information for tonight, but I can't start with the greatest. Well, no, because I can start with the greatest newspaper on the planet. That is the Final Call newspaper. And say that because in the wake of Ferguson, you know, the cover article by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is strengthening the black community. And as we are seeing, and we talked about last week, reconciliation, and part of us strengthening the black community is coming back to reconcile our differences. And as you said, when we watch Ferguson, we are watching young people that may have been at war or at odds with each other. They are now witnessing an open enemy. They see the tear gas. They see the guns. So the young people are coming together. They don't have the division of unity to break them up. They're coming together against a common enemy, which helps us now to come together to really understand who that enemy is and to start building and do some work. Because there's discussions nationally going on beyond Ferguson. What is next? But it's interesting that I just saw today, or just released on BET, CEO and president of the Hip Hop Caucus, who had on here, has a segment on BET talking about Ferguson. So, 4 minutes, at least a little bit over 4 minutes, but it was saying that what happened with the young people, how can you tell them not to be quiet in a day when you wanted young people to be involved, you wanted young people to stand up? Ferguson is that place where we're watching young people rise up, stand up, and doing what is needed. And this is that fearless generation that we watched the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan speak to on August the 17th. And on that day after that lecture of August 17th, and on the 18th, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan spoke with some of our great spoken word artists. And I say that because when we look at the group Black Star and half of that group, Talib Kweli, great hip-hop MC, was with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And you can see him on page 35 of the Final Call newspaper. You can see our brother, rap activist, Brother Ali. And then when a few names, well, I ain't into that conscious hip-hop, that Jasiri yet, so I'm not into that. Well, we had King Louis in the house. We even had Katie Got Bands listening to Minister Farrakhan, Little Reese. You know, all of these hip-hop artists that have that hardcore, quote-unquote, gangster music was with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You can read about it in the latest edition of the Final Call newspaper. They're listening to him, so hopefully some of that message will get out to our young people. So it's a beautiful thing, and I'm waiting for us to be down in the wonderful, beautiful city of Jamaica for the 19th anniversary of the Holy Day of Atonement. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan will be speaking on October the 19th down in Kingston, Jamaica. So we want everybody to make your way down for the anniversary of the Holy Day of Atonement. Also in Tuskegee, I think there's a Blue Seas restaurant opening up this Saturday, grand opening this Saturday in Tuskegee, Alabama, a Blue Seas restaurant for our community economic development. And the last two things I will close out is do not forget the economic blueprint of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that has been brought to our attention by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So we can go to economicblueprint.org, economicblueprint.org. And last but not least, the time and what must be done. We want people to rewatch, see it for the first time, the 58-week series, lecture series that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan did last year. You must and we need to go back and watch it again. It gives a whole lot of light and understanding of what's going on today.
Well, thank you so much.
That was pretty good, brother. Go ahead, brother. Homework. That was pretty good.
Yeah, he picked up, he dropped the ball and picked it up quickly before the other team got it. And
hey, no fumble on this play.
No fumble. Yes. And so we're going to move into tonight's discussion. Again, as I noted, Brother Ashad, the assistant, Ashad Muhammad, who is the assistant editor of the greatest newspaper on the earth, and the reason is it's truth from cover to cover, and it is truly black-owned and black-published on the real. You don't get behind the curtain and there's somebody other than us, as you do with every single other thing that claims to be black. This is the only publication that national newspaper that truly is black-owned and black-published, and it is the only place you're going to get the pure truth as to what is important to us as a people. And so before we continue, I want to make sure that Brother Ashad's mic is open and welcome him. He also is my co-host and producer.
That's right.
He does a million things. On Sunday edition of Elevated Places, WVON Radio, right here in Chicago. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Ashad.
Wa alaikum salam, Dr. Ava. It's great to be with you, the Elevated Places team, and the family who is tuning in to listen to us this evening.
Well, all praise is due to Allah. We've got a long list of people. And, of course, you were on the ground in Ferguson this past weekend. And I was telling the listeners earlier that between you and Brother Akbar Muhammad, he got some facts that are just stunningly distinct from what the white and Jewish-controlled media is bringing. And even the Negro minions who are parroting what white media is projecting and the picture that's being painted of Ferguson and of the citizen people of Ferguson. And so before we go any further into the discussion, I wanted you to lay a base for us so that we have an idea, starting with the number of people that were out on Saturday for that demonstration.
Yes. Well, definitely that's a good place to start, because the media will have you think that the push for justice for Michael Brown and his family is dying down. They'll have you think that because they're not reporting on it the way they were around the clock, that it's in some way in the black community, people aren't paying attention to it. But it actually is just the opposite. What is happening right now is that it has moved from just a particular moment to an actual movement. So there's a legal arm of it in which Black Lawyers for Justice filed a $40 million lawsuit against the Ferguson Police Department and political officials there. That's very important. We are still receiving calls from individuals such as a young lady who lost her child. She was pregnant and lost her baby, and it could have been perhaps because of the tear gas that was shot into the crowd. We're getting all kinds of different reports from people who want to have their story heard regarding their civil rights being violated down in Ferguson during the days, really mainly August 9th through 11th, during the time when they had the serious riots and the unrest. There's also a component that's dealing with social media. They've launched a website to try to harness the energy of these young people who are all on social media. They've also launched possibly acts of disobedience coming up. Now, there was supposed to be acts of disobedience on the 2nd of September in which they were going to shut down the freeway, but the father, Michael Brown Sr., who was really, really committed and is a fierce warrior for justice for his son, you could see it in his eyes, you could see it in his countenance, you could hear it in his voice. He asked that we give the officials a period of time to act in good faith. They changed the Department of Public Service, or the Department of Public Safety, changed leadership. They wanted to give him the opportunity to do some things to show good faith. And so he asked that they not implement the strategy of civil disobedience yet, but it's there just in case they don't move forward in some of the action areas. But there were some people who didn't get the memo and didn't get the message, so they very successfully shut down parts of the freeway. Courageously, they got out there in their cars and parked and, you know, shut it down, took some pictures with their hands up saying, hands up, don't shoot. So there are many different arms of this movement. So, and it's being portrayed, you know, they always want to portray it as the black people were emotional and they started burning stuff up. But there's even a question as to whether that sicko that you heard about that was burned up, whether that was even the rioters or the protesters. There's questions, and many people in the area that I talked to on the ground said that they don't believe that their people did it. They don't believe that any rioters or so-called rioters or protesters did that. So there's still some questions coming out, but I just wanted to let everybody know that it is a movement. It's going beyond, and as you have that experience, warrior, Brother Abdul Akbar Muhammad, who not only is an experienced organizer as a minister in New York under Minister Farrakhan and operating in New York and also in St. Louis, but he's also seen these kinds of movements in Africa. So what he adds to the conversation and discussion is really invaluable. You have Anthony Shaheed, who is well known in the streets of St. Louis. He's not new to the activism. And the people, the youngsters there, reached out to him. As soon as it happened, they reached out to him and said, hey, we need you on this. So it's not, you know, we're not those people who are thrusting ourselves into the discussion because the cameras are there. We are there before the cameras, and we'll be there after the cameras are gone. And that's, I think, the emphasis that has to be made right now, not only in Ferguson, but black people, we need to always move beyond just the moment and towards a movement in all cases when we start protesting injustice or crimes against humanity that occur at the hands of the police department.
Now, today I saw briefly Eric Holder. I don't know if this was live or recorded, press conference announcing the federal government is investigating the Ferguson Police Department beyond in addition to the killing of Michael Brown. The federal government is investigating the practices of the police department itself. And separate and apart from my view of that announcement, because frankly, I just and I'm sure many feel like me, but I just feel that the federal government that we have, because we have a black president and a black attorney general, and this is the second and final term, that more use could have been made of the powers of the office to be more effective in this matter. I think it is absolutely criminal that a prosecutor who should have been removed from this case has announced that it could be October, November, or even December before there is a result. When I know as a former assistant district attorney myself, you can get an indictment in 30 minutes if that's what you want as a prosecutor, particularly when you have all of the essential elements of the crime in your face, as we do in this one. But the investigation of the department itself is taking place, and I just wanted to make that point to dovetail on what Brother Shah just said, that none of this is new.
Right.
And the reaction of the people in Ferguson is a cumulative effect of decades of repression, and really from the time we were brought to these shores in chains, this has been life for us as black people. And so this is why I'm imploring us to cease and desist the silliness that we're engaging in, and to come to a decision that it is time to part ways with the enemies of our people, the children of our slave master, and stop putting our mind daily on how we're going to make it, how we're going to survive, how we're going to be successful in the white man's reality, because we're not. Number one, it's coming down. And number two, they're making it clear to us in the Ferguson behavior pattern that they want nothing to do with us. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, no, that's absolutely correct. Absolutely. And Ferguson, as we talked to the Ferguson Police Department and the different individuals there, and as we talked to the different people in the neighborhood, it was well known. I mean, you know how some people know in black communities, they say this is a place where you don't go. Almost all major urban cities have that kind of a place where they say, okay, this is white dominated, or if you go over here, these police are going to be particularly brutal. That was known, across age ranges, demographics, as far as whether people were professional, whether they were high schoolers or whatever the situation was. It was known that Ferguson was an area where the police officers were known for harassing you for minor things, for being particularly belligerent and an oppressive force. So no one I talked to there, black, white, or otherwise, none of them was surprised that the police officer shot Mike Brown. And even there were some white people there. There was a particular white man who was there with the protesters. And, you know, we've been keeping our eyes on the different white protesters because they, in many cases, have been agitated. But this particular white man was actually talking to the police officers, and he was saying and talking to us about how he has been pulled over and profiled just in general in Ferguson just for simply having a black person in the car with him. He said it happened to him more than on one occasion, just pulled over in general as if you're living in apartheid. And I think what people need to realize is that this is going on. This is not, you know, down, you know, really, really far south where you think of like Mississippi or something like that. This is just outside of St. Louis, maybe 10 minutes outside of St. Louis, like a suburb of the city. It's really not far away at all. And so while you're experiencing the downtown St. Louis area, just a few minutes away, you have this kind of oppression going on. And so Ferguson now is being used as the microcosm, as the minister said, of the macrocosm to show what is happening in cities all across America. And if you have a Ferguson Police Department that is militarized and ready to implement, what do you think is ready in New York? What do you think is ready in Chicago?
Exactly.
What do you think is ready in Los Angeles? What do you think is ready already in these places where they've shown the propensity to use lethal force when dealing with black people, and down in Houston, where they, and Houston on the border of Arizona, where they use lethal force against Latinos who are in many cases coming across the border? So this is something that we need to think about and be aware of it, and really inform all of our people that this is what's going on. It's not new, and we have to prepare prior to it taking place and not be reactive and realize that this is the existence that we live in, and the only way to stop them from killing us is to keep them out of our communities.
That's
well,
exactly right.
The only way to keep them out of our community is to have a control of a community. And right now, right. We live in areas, but we don't consider ourselves as a community. And one of the reasons we don't is that we've been running after the dollar bill all across the country, to where we've lost our roots. And then they've moved us around within these cities, so you don't have those attachments to the high school and the neighborhood school or anything like that. You're just left out there by yourself. And it's not just in St. Louis or the South, but you have the racial profiling that they talked about in New York City. I mean, it's going on all across the country. And right down here in Dawson, Georgia, every Wednesday, I see a line of people waiting to pay fines, like in Ferguson. Like in Ferguson, where they're charging people a $100 ticket for going 37 miles per hour in a 35-mile-per-hour zone. So the people are under siege, and it's going on all across the country, and their budgets are being, 2008 was the end of the economics of this country. And for people to survive, what these cities are doing is that they're surviving off of fleecing black people.
That's exactly
and
right.
And it's killing us economically. You can't work. You got to go to this, pay this fine. You can't work. They're on parole. They're fleecing you on parole. I got workers out here who've been fleeced by the parole officers. So this is the fleecing of black people, and we go be nothing but bones if we don't pull out of this and do something for ourselves and tell them this is the border. This is the border.
Yeah, this is one of the council members had mentioned earlier this week, right here in Chicago, and people in Chicago are familiar with it, 95th Street, Jeffrey Boulevard, motor vehicles. I'm sorry, City of Chicago, traffic.
Right.
And it is on any given day, the line goes outside. First of all, the area, as always with us, the areas that we occupy and where we are consumers are always the most unattractive, unappealing, downtrodden, filthy type areas. There's never sufficient space to handle whatever the service is supposed to be. And it's no different here. And the brother was sharing with us that when he walked in there, it left him infuriated because one brother was basically begging at the window with the clerk. And, of course, they have black people manning these places.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. White people are the supervisory positions. But the black people were at the window, and the man was saying, I finally got a job, okay? Been employed for over a year. I got a job, and the first day of work, I walked out of my house, and there was a boot on my car.
Mm.
And I was told, he said, first of all, I was trying to fight this ticket. I shouldn't have got this ticket. I was trying to fight it, but then I was told on the phone that I had to pay $600.
Right.
I gathered together the $600.
Mm.
Now I'm here, and you're telling me it's $800.
Mm. Mm.
I don't have $800. I've worn out every person I can think of to put this. He was all but in tears. And the line, he said, ran the length of the building. And so that is very real. All of the corruption, all the money these people have been stealing for years, now these cities are broke. They have no money. And so it's being replaced off the backs of black people. And it is literally driving us, and it's meant to do that, driving us
out
of So as you're saying, we have to be united, and the difference between a ghetto and a community is the mindset of the people in it.
Right.
That's right.
That's why I showed that lion on Sunday. The lion walked to the edge edge of the land, and he let the alligator, the crocodile, know, look, man, you crossed over your area. You got to back up out of here. Okay, nobody was trying to talk with the crocodile, hang out with the crocodile, please the crocodile. The female lions do not teach their cubs, oh, when you see a crocodile, just bow down. None of that was happening. And when the crocodile hesitated, the pride protector moved down into his territory.
Well, come on.
To let him know. You know, you go, I want you all the way back up out of here. And that is what we have to start doing, meeting them at the border, as all of you you are saying. There is no other solution. You know, now I'm hearing on the radio body cameras. I don't know if they were talking about that, Brother Shaw, but body cameras. So we can, but so you come to my door and tell me my son has been shot in the head and body by a white cop, and so, wow, I get to see a movie of it? What?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And as you know, Dr. Ava, I mean, historically, police officers have known how to evade those cameras. I can hear right now them saying, oh, I was involved in this struggle, and I don't know how my camera came off my clip and didn't see what I was doing.
Right.
And as you know, we actually reported on this in the final call in Los Angeles, where there were over 30% to 40% of the police cameras that were supposed to be monitoring the vehicles, they were disabled. They found a way to disable those cameras. So while symbolically it represents a step forward as far as the activism is concerned, and I'm sure that many people will say that that's a step forward, having police officers with these cameras on, I do believe that thinking that that is going to be the solution is very short-sighted. We've seen they have the ability to evade justice, so you're absolutely correct. Seeing it would be really, really devastating, even more so for the family and those who would look at it, and it would be dissected in such a way that it would do a serious injustice to the memory of the person who lost his life, as it is in the case with Mike Brown. Really, Dr. Ava and everyone here, that's really what upset the people so much. The people they were upset definitely that he got killed, don't get me wrong, the police shot him, but what really, really set it off and really got their emotions stirring was that they let the young brother's body lay there for 4.5 hours.
Right.
And that was really what got people upset. And they told a couple of the community leaders, this was conveyed to us by Brother Richard, that the police officers actually said, just give us a few seconds, get the crowd back, because the crowd had begun to swell up. And they said, well, if you just get the crowd back a little bit, what we'll do is we'll get the body taken care of, get a sheet over it, and get it taken care of. They didn't do it. What they did was they came back with dogs in order to keep the crowd back. And let the brother's body lay there. And Dr. Ava brought that point up so eloquently this time and many other times, that was on purpose so that they could show that we killed this nigga and we'll kill you too if you say something. It was the equivalent of a modern-day lynching that we saw with our brother Mike Brown, and we should call it as we see it.
That's exactly right. And you know, the other analogy to the sheep and why God calls us his lost sheep. See, because, you know, as I noted, the only species of animal where the predator, and in that case a wolf or coyote, they can walk right up in the midst of sheep, take one, kill it, and then actually stand there and eat it while the other sheep watch. And so we're also witnessing the unfolding of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's statement to us, Allah will make you separate.
That's right.
See, he's showing us there is no way to placate these people.
That's right.
So this is why the minister said Trayvon Martin's murder was the nail in the coffin.
Right.
Not because, and I realize it with Ferguson, not because of what Trayvon's murder did to anger us, but what it did to unleash them.
Right.
So that they could return to the comfort of post-Reconstruction Jim Crow South, where now I can just openly gun down black people like I've been dying to do. since the civil rights struggle, and you all have held me back. Now I can return to my nature, which is to kill black folks on sight. And that's what we're living with.
And
but
well,
let
I
me, you all each make a comment, and then we'll go to the phones. Go right ahead, Brother
yeah,
Terrence.
And
Dr. Richard.
Yeah, I just want to jump in and just to say that, you know,
sure.
I forgot to say that that clip that you showed at the end of your lecture was so profound, so powerful. Al Marston just was going, well, I think I was the loudest one shouting. but it really opens up when you just gave the analogy about the sheep, that you need a powerful shepherd. Because, like you said, they will kill you and show you that they're killing and dare you to say something. So when we're now in black leadership or looking, as Brother Shah said, you know, they got cameras now on them. What a camera going to do? We could take that off. We have video cameras. Rodney King, he got off. You know, so
exactly.
What does that mean? So now we also, there's going to be a meeting, I guess, with the Attorney General Holder next week at the White House. No, what are we going to do? What are the Justice Department? When has the Justice Department ever had a long-term history of being the number one defender of black people? They don't. So then when you look at that lion in the picture that you showed, this lion, and people need to see that clip, he walked, like you said, walked up into the enemy's territory. Sometimes, you know, you don't cross over the lines of territory because that's not your area of expertise. I saw those strong legs, and that just made me think of Farrakhan. Farrakhan is not, didn't buck, he didn't shake. That alligator opened up his mouth to show the lion, I got teeth, I will bite you, and I got my whole crew swimming around. The lion did not flinch. It kept walking. It walked up in the water until, like you said, his head went submerged and backed away. That's the kind of leadership we need, and that's the kind of leadership Minister Farrakhan represents. He is the lion, and he is calling the other lions just like him in the community and our youth to do the same thing. Do not back down about against this enemy, because that enemy is scared of you. He knows who he is, and the minister knew who he is, so he's not scared of whatever. That's why he dared them. He said, I am a dare to you. Come on, bring whatever you got.
That's right. Whatever you've got, bring it.
And, you know, in terms of Minister Farrakhan being the lion, you know, he told us that on the 17th, you know, that he is
sure
a lion.
He sure did. The lion doesn't retire.
That's right. The lion doesn't retire. But what the enemy did with Ferguson, and we were trying to turn it back around, was that the Minister Farrakhan talked a lot more about other things other than Ferguson on the 17th. And Israel and the Jews, when they came out to report what he said, they didn't report what he said until 8 days later, and it only took a portion of what he said in relationship to just a portion of Ferguson and made that the issue.
Right.
The issue is what's going on in America is the same thing was going on in Gaza, and in fact, some people had signs saying Israel trained NYPD, and we would say Google that. And when you go Google it, you find that Israel has been training the major police forces, including St. Louis. Why is Israel training our police forces when you see how Israel is treating the Palestinians? Like Minister Farrakhan said, they are preparing this for us. And they didn't put that part out in the media. That's why we have the final call and our own reports that we're doing to put it out in the media, the other part of what Minister Farrakhan said, because that's the part that they don't want. And in particular, there's one part that Minister Farrakhan said. I mean, he just blew me away. He said, look, y'all bring that up here in black Chicago, and me and Father Flagan, we going hand in hand in front of the tanks and dare you to shoot us.
That's right.
Now, that's bold. That's that lion right there.
Your point is so outstanding also, and I've been talking about this recently, because it's not only the ADL training the police officers across the United States, but also the Jewish Institute of National Security Affairs. They actually send these people over to learn counterterrorism measures in Israel. So it's not just our HBCU student leaders who are targeted by the Zionist lobby. It is not just newspaper editors that are targeted. It's not just America's political officials, but it's also those who are responsible for law enforcement. And I would imagine that there are some black people who are being sent over there as well to learn that and come back to these cities.
Yes.
And I think we really have to begin to talk to people about that, because what you're saying is related to The stop and frisk in New York, which is going on, is related to the profiling. Right now, just like what you said, what you see in Gaza, the Palestinians have been dehumanized, and so the world sits by and watches when they're murdered and killed by the superior firepower of Israel. It's the exact same thing here in the United States. Black people are dehumanized. We're less than human, so there's no outcry except among us when we're shot down by the police officers or whomever. And it's all related. The racial profiling that's going on, the black plus male equals criminal, the Muslim equals terrorist, all of it's connected, and it's going to get even worse because now they are trying to tie black Muslims to the recruitment
exactly.
of ISIL
right.
and the Al-Shabaab
right.
and these other groups in the Middle East and other areas
right.
that are fighting. So it's only going to get worse, and we're going to experience another wave of Islamophobia, not directed at the immigrant Muslims, but directed at black Muslims in the United States of America who won't bow down and who will not allow you to come in and be amongst us.
And you know, to your point, Brother Ashad and Dr. Rizzi and Brother Terrence, all, I mean, that's why I love this program, because we got to think out loud, because that's what they're doing. So that's the
right.
other thing. That's how you know we're at the end of time, because both the adversaries are open about their intent.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
the Honorable Elijah Muhammad ushered in the era of the outspoken black leader. Okay, we're not sliding around in the corner and Mr. Charlie and all that. He told them right in their face, you are the devil. Okay, I represent the God who is executing judgment on you and you Negroes that are with them. Because, see, to the point that Brother Ashad just raised about black police officers, if we're listening, we're hearing woven in through all broadcasts and media interviews, commentary from black people that is absolutely nothing short of treason.
Right.
You know, I heard an old brother say today on Al Sharpton's show, he called in, and I was driving. You know, sometimes I have to pull over. I can't believe what I'm hearing. And he said that the reason black people in Ferguson are suffering is they're not voting.
Mm-hmm.
And he said what should have happened in the wake of Michael Brown's death was a registration booth should have been set up on every corner. You know, see, our inability to distinguish politics, okay, from our basic right as a human being. You know, I can't vote my way into equality in the eyesight of a being that has a damaged perception of reality, is not themselves human.
Right.
And does not define me in the narrow world of politics. See, I should not have to vote. We should participate in a political system, but for what until we're recognized as human beings? Because I shouldn't have to vote to protect myself from being executed in the streets. Then you have another sister saying, this is not about race. This is not about black. It's about blue. And
right.
that's what I wanted to get to Brother Ashad's point, that there are black police officers that have been shaped and molded into a mindset
That's
and
right.
are as dangerous to us yeah. as the white slave master, because just like the people that told on Nat Turner.
Right.
Okay, the FBI agents, like you all just said, the Department of Justice has no real history of being on our side. That's the same Department of Justice that developed COINTELPRO.
Right.
And set up our people to be killed. That's the same Department of Justice where the FBI's memorandum took credit for Malcolm's assassination.
Right.
Woo.
That's right.
Boasted about it in memoranda that is available to all of us if we just Google it. And so we got to remember when they say, oh, the Department of Justice, which is who? And so we better be watchful, as you all are saying, of the larger picture,
right.
and it is going to get worse. But we've got some callers waiting. Brother Keith, welcome back to Elevated Places. You're live. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Ava Muhammad, and to the whole family or whatever. First, I want to say America's not run on law. It's run on gangster law, bully system. Whoever got the biggest might win. America is the original gangster or whatever. So, you know, I want to get that the way. And I'm going to say, as Minister Farrakhan say, economics without politics is symbol without substance. No people, put it like this. You don't see no Asian mainstream person talking about, I want to see the President of the United States. But they voice it being heard because they got an economic system backing them. So I'm saying separation is the best known solution. We got to separate from these people. They are overtly killing our people in broad daylight and justifying their act. So the only solution is a separation. And the separation must be a movement behind that. And the separation would be the answer to all our problems dealing with these people or whatever. So, but in order for something of that nature to happen, I feel black people, we suffer from a bad messianic complex. Every generation we look for something to pop out the sky and save our people. So what we need to do, you know, obviously, you know, develop economic systems, because in order to take down a system, you got to develop your own system. Because the white man, he has think tanks. The white man, but here has some white men where they come together and they say, how will we take over the world in the next 50 years? They set up a process, a blueprint, and a know-how on how they're going to establish that. And if they don't, they pass it down to their children. So intergenerational power, wealth, and influence is being passed down. Black people have a bad habit of reinventing the wheel every generation, trying to start something new. We need to build and add on and separate or repatriate to a black country, or move into the rural areas when the police or the powers that don't have a strong presence, so we can, you know, quietly develop our systems or whatever. So that's all I have to say, and I just want to hear your response to something of that nature I said or whatever, for us, from the separation or going into the rural communities and building those cities and communities up or whatever.
Well, you got right down my line, so I ain't going to say nothing.
That's right. 1,000% agreement with this group, this panel.
That's right. That's right.
We've got Brother James on. He has a question regarding the gathering that Minister Farrakhan held at the Salam restaurant for 2 days. Brother James, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Elevated Places. You are live.
Thank you very much, dear Sister Minister and Dr. Ava, and of course all of those with you on this wonderful show. I just want to speak to that statement you shared with us from our Reverend Al Sharpton regarding, the solution is we have to vote. And this, you know, I have to say that this is representative of that residual effect of slavery, wherein the slave always thinks that no matter how badly he's treated by the master, he must always seek redress in such a way that it does not fully disconnect him from the master. Mm-hmm. He can't see outside of being connected to the master to enjoy freedom. It's ridiculous. And it made me think about the mantra that he popularized. And this is not to be super critical of my brother, but no justice, no peace. And I've been to several rallies when he featured prominently. And the first thing that they tell you, this is a peaceful rally. Make sure that you remain peaceful. Now, the enemy is no fool. He's looking at this and listening to this. He knows that he has, as of yet, to render justice in the circumstance.
Right.
But we're being exhorted to peace, so that negates the whole mantra, the whole significance of it. No justice, no peace. Now, the request that I actually wanted to make was if you could share with us, if you were present or anyone with you was present, some of the wonderful advice and teachings that the minister gave those who were the street organization leaders. We'd like to attempt to repeat that in our local areas, to bring the street organization leaders together and, of course, by extension, their membership. So if you could share with us, if you would, some of the guiding points that the minister shared with you and with them. at that
time.
Oh,
absolutely. I can tell you about that. Absolutely. It was a marvelous thing to watch. Many of the street organizations were present, and I'm not talking just about some of them. I'm talking about a majority, almost all of the street organizations were represented across the entire city of Chicago, North Side, West Side, South Side, as well as different nationalities, you know, as far as, you know, the Latin gangs and those organizations as well. And I think that one of the things that Minister Farrakhan does so marvelously and why he is so loved, and when he makes a call to hip-hoppers and poets and spoken word artists and the street organizations, he makes the call and they respond. They respect him, and he's not judgmental. But he will tell them about themselves and raise them up to a new level of understanding and consciousness. And I think that that is the key. If anyone is going out into the community amongst the youth, you have to be real. You can't go with a self-righteous attitude. You can't go making promises that you can't keep. If you don't have nothing for them, say that. You know, if you don't have anything for them to come into to make money, because a lot of those brothers, as we were out in the streets, and I was able to watch this with my own eyes and have no fear of being contradicted, I know what I saw. And when we walked out with Minister Farrakhan talking to the brothers in the streets, they were just saying, you know, we would like to do something else, but we don't really have any options. We're trying to, and the minister would say, well, we're going to show you a better way. And so I think that anyone who is initiating a move to go out in the street organizations, I think, first of all, it starts with identifying those individuals who are really, really out in the street. One thing that was interesting is that the minister, there were people who helped with the gathering of the street organizations, but they weren't necessarily people that you see at the mosque every day. You see people who are out in the street doing the work, and they were treated with honor and respect. They were out doing the work, and that was something that Minister Farrakhan pointed to. He said these individuals love the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. They love the word, and they are here, and they're with us, and they're available to help in many cities. And what I've seen in many cases is that we like to ask people to help who we're comfortable with. We'll ask them to help. They're cool with us, so we can tell them, you know, what to do or whatever. But sometimes you have to find a way to work with those people who may have influence in the street and let them speak the language of the people and greet the convert in their own way. That is what it says in our lessons, and that's what needs to happen. If you're going after the youth, let the youth go out there and get the youth and talk to them and do it in their own way using their strategy. I guarantee you they'll be more effective than anybody who's in leadership going to try to get the youth just saying that they're trying to get the youth. And so I think that's the global view of what Minister Farrakhan said and did. Of course, he didn't condemn the brothers and sisters. He just gave them a way out and showed them that once they stand up, they will have the backing of the people. But a lot of them are just afraid to stand up. They're afraid to stand up because when you're in that world of entertainment and you're in that world of hip-hop or you're in that world of acting or you're in that world of modeling and someone is signing your checks, and as soon as you say something that they don't like or say that you went to visit or listen to somebody that they might not be pleased with, you're in jeopardy. And we have to understand that that is a real, real fear with individuals who are out in this world. Going back to the street organizations, many of them don't know the history of their street organizations.
That's right.
Very good.
And so, see, in Chicago, you know, of course, the street organizations in Chicago have had laws and rules, and, you know, there was even some gangs who one of the aspects of what they were supposed to do was they were required to go to Juma. Some of them had that type of reality. This was back in the 60s and 70s. So I think we have to look at that, and while we're talking to the newer street organization members, understand that they can't be condemned because many of them just don't know that history. They may have heard it from some individuals. They may have heard that from someone talking, but they don't know necessarily the reality of it. So those are the quick things. Of course, there's much more. The minister, of course, was coming out of justifiable homicide and all the things that he said to the street organizations over the years about us killing each other, and that we justify, they're justified in killing us because they say we're killing each other. You know, if a white man sees you killing your own and killing your own children, he absolutely knows that you're going to kill him if you get a chance. And that's why they fear you. That's why they fear the black men out there in the street organization. So those are just three quick things. I know I said a lot quickly, but those are the three things that I think are important to wherever you are, whether it's in the East Coast, West Coast, down south, wherever it is. I think those principles and policies will work across the board.
I appreciate that, dear brother. And if I can say very quickly to those Negro leaders who have seemed to reach an impasse in their ability to communicate with the youth and stop the violence that is happening, not necessarily from them, originating from them, but through them. Read the minister's article, Strengthening the Black Community, Strategies for Reducing Violence, when he stated that the root cause of violence is hopelessness and despair, and then research from whence that hopelessness and despair is coming. So
thank you all.
Wonderful show, dear sister.
Yeah. What wonderful caller, dear brother. Thank you, sir.
And Sister Ava, I just wanted to add a couple of points, because just recently in my city, two people just got killed, and we was going out to the community, and I actually had to handle a situation of reconciliation to stop some retaliation. But one of the things, everything that Brother Ashad said is absolutely true. And one of the things about what Brother Ashad said, these are the principles that you're talking about in Chicago is like the murder capital. And people that got had long-standing history. So when the minister invited them, these are not just no quote-unquote Rudy Pooh, because in some cities, they popping up. But the thing about it is two things about the minister. He is absolutely sincere, and people feel that. So before you go to any young people, any gangs, any organization, you really must be straight, understand that your heart is sincere, because just like a dog can smell fear, our folks and our young people, they can smell fakeness on us.
That's right. And the other thing
is the minister's word is bond. So do not guarantee, do not offer young people anything that you can't fulfill the promise on. See, the minister can speak because he's backed by God, and he's backed by those that want to make his word bond. So make sure that your word is bond, and that you have sincerity and true love for them, because that's the ultimate thing that they're looking for.
Yeah, and you know, to the point about this generation and having two myself, as I'm always telling everybody, we're just going through a struggle with mine. And one thing I've learned with this young generation, because they are born for something specific that they are to do, that is key in the Exodus. And so you have to follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teaching not to speak ahead of your ability to do. And with these children, you can't even be equivocal. If you are not absolutely certain you can deliver on something, just don't say anything about it.
They don't really
comprehend maybe. Okay, you understand what I'm saying? I learned that the hard way with them. You can't say, well, I might do it, or if I can. Don't say that. The Holy Quran teaches us that when Allah desires a thing, He only says to it, be, and it is. This generation has no respect for any authority except from the Lord of the Worlds. And they respect the Lord of the Worlds because of his absolute power to subdue them. And it is only Minister Farrakhan who is the voice through which or through whom the Lord of the Worlds speaks. The sheep recognize the voice of the Lord in the shepherd. These people who are talking to our children I think it is so ridiculous and insulting to hear them talking over a television or radio. You all need to go to school. You all, first of all, they're not listening to you.
Come on.
On MSNBC and CNN.
Right.
Are you serious?
That's right.
It's only old people the same age as you, like me, who's even listening to you. And I'm only listening so I can tear you apart
Come on.
Out in the public the moment I get an opportunity. I mean, how are you going to correct our babies in the Jews' TV studio?
Come on.
You know, just to bear witness to what you all are saying about the minister being real and also understanding the power of youth to communicate with youth. And so without young people speaking this, and that's where the power is coming from, when young rappers are affected by this word and begin to fold it into their rap.
Right.
That's when you're going to see the transformation.
Right.
But we've got a caller who's been waiting patiently, and I'm going to, oh, we've quite a few, but I'm going to open up the line to our next caller. 901 area code, Dr. Salam. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Assalamu alaikum, family.
Welcome back, I should say. Yes, sir. Walaikum salam.
Yes,
sir.
Dr. Ava, Brother Flight Lieutenant, Dr. Ridgely, and our brother, our dear brother Ashad. Thank you, brother. And firstly, Dr. Ava, thank you for last Sunday. You did not just validate the minister. You validated yourself as what I have called you from the time I met you, and that's the most powerful black woman on this planet. I thank you for what you do for Minister Farrakhan, as well as the believers who are on post. But in reference to something that's close to me and to you, Dr. Ava, is the first rule of law school. The first rule of law school is to never commit anything to paper. There is nothing out here in any state that is pro-black people. There's no laws on the books for us. If you take a look at Ferguson, Missouri, which was established in 1970, that Ferguson is rooted from the word Fergus, who was an Irish legend and king of Ulster, who was defeated by another king named Cuchulainn. And the only reason I'm mentioning these things is because when we go into courts, we really don't have a chance unless something is cut and dry in our favor. Go back to Trayvon Martin, and you can see that the courts really was not in our favor, and nobody really wanted to give that verdict, but it happened anyway. But as far as the police department, brothers and sisters, there are no black police officers in North America. These are patrons for the master. Here is a police director in Ferguson who can't galvanize enough of his own people to stand up for the evil that is underneath him in his department. He's not a police director, nor is any other black police officer a true police director. They bow down to the master to get the positions, and they bow down deeper to keep them. So all I can say is that I vote for separation. It is the only answer, and it's becoming easier and easier to see that clearly. And I thank you for allowing me to share these words, and Brother Ashad, it's always good hearing you, brother. And
thank you
so for
much.
All you do. That's
thank
what I'm
you.
Thinking.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Well, you know, the as I pointed out Sunday, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said state or, which is an alternative option, state or territory.
Mm-hmm.
And it, as we evolve and mature, his wisdom sparkles brighter. And it's not that it was always divine, but we're growing to see it. Territory,
right.
You know, an area. We're just going to have to start with an area.
Right.
And those of us who live within that area will understand the time and what must be done, troubled times, and answer the question, what should we be doing? But the primary action that we need to take is to begin to form, to crystallize together in communities, starting with neighbors, blocks, and then it will spread from there. There is nothing else being put in front of us that is even viable. other than separation. We're going to
You know, Dr. Ava.
Oh, yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, I wanted to point out that to everyone on the call is that we saw immediate action based on Minister Farrakhan's words on the 17th and 18th to the hip-hop community. Here in Chicago, some of the most well-known rappers that you know of tweeted and said to watch the minister's speech. Then there were others who have been tweeting out, like, locations of peace rallies and participating in peace rallies and things of that nature. And then another thing I think that people need to realize is that during the past holidays here in Chicago, you've had bloodbaths. We recently passed one, and you did not have a bloodbath like you usually have. And I attribute that absolutely to the word and will of Minister Farrakhan going out amongst these brothers to stop this fratricidal killing. And we cannot see that as separate from what he said and then experiencing what we experienced over the last holiday, which was less than 2 weeks after that, even during the time where Ferguson was still raging. So I just wanted to point that out.
Well, that is so critical to note.
That's right.
That and Brother Shot is absolutely right. We haven't had in recent years a holiday of any sort go by, any long weekend, without hearing a report on the return of the work week that were 9, 10, 14, 15 people shot. I think one time it was like 30 people shot and 9 dead. And these kinds of numbers. And see, what happens is, despite the conspiracy against us, it can't be effectuated unless we provide an environment where it looks valid. You know, as he said recently, and I don't recall if it was the past Sunday, but I can hear him in my mind saying, you know, falsehood eternally connects itself to truth. It always, without fail, locks itself to truth. It can't exist without truth, because falsehood is an illusion. The Quran said it's an ever-vanishing thing. And so if we don't provide an environment where it's believable that we would kill each other in this way, then it can't be done. So you force the enemy to regroup. And I think that's what happened this weekend. And as you pointed out to me earlier, Dr. Ridgely, that's also what happened with the Gaza Strip. They had to regroup.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the whole world is looking at what's going on with us in America, and now we can tie it back to what's going on over there in Israel. And once the people recognize who the enemy is, then they start fighting one another. You know, a friend of mine made an analogy. He said, if you grab up two puppies and you hit them against one another in the face, and then put them back down, they're gonna fight. But they don't look to see who's the one who grabbed them and hit them and bumped them together. So it's when they look and see who is behind all of this, and they expose themselves in Ferguson, then the people will stop for a minute and not fight against one another and realize that there is somebody behind the scenes who's manipulating them. Therefore, they can slow down a minute and say, look, man, forget what you just did to me. I see where you're coming from. I see who put it there. Like Sister Pamela said, that in St. Louis area, a guy was given a gun, and they got it on recording. He was given, said, if you don't place this gun on somebody, we're going to put you in jail. And that was actually a recording of that. So this is what's going on in our community. They're making us enemies to one another. When we turn around and realize who's really doing it, we can look beyond the faults of our brother and our sister and see the evil shepherd. Not the good shepherd, but the evil shepherd in the background back there.
I'm sorry, I went into mute land for some reason. These are excellent points. We're down to 20 minutes, and so I'm going to get to Sister Karima. And let me open up her mic. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Karima. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Wa alaikum salam, Minister Ava, Dr. Ridgely, Brother Shad, Brother Terrence. I wanted to speak on us leaving our brother in the street uncovered. It all started weighing heavy on me with the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina when Dr. Carruthers showed how there was a black man that was laying in the street for over 2 weeks and nobody picked him up. And what happened with the dead during the aftermath of the earthquake in Haiti, whether it would be alligators feeding on our dead brothers and sisters in the South or coyotes in Chicago during an act of Allah, or even Caucasians picking up our deceased like they did of their own during the Great Depression. We should be able to pick up our own brothers and sisters. If it's a crime scene in my neighborhood, there's no way I can know about it and I not break through the yellow tape and cover my brother or sister, whether it's with my cape from my MGP garment, if I'm out in my garment that day, or it's my chiffon. There's no way we should be letting them look on our brothers and sisters as a trophy on what they did and to give a message for us to stay in our place. Salaam alaikum.
Yes, ma'am. You're exactly right, Sister Karima. But again, there's a root cause of behavior. And, of course, the tragic figure, whether it's young Michael Brown or our brothers and sisters in Katrina, there's a long history, as we know, dating back to slavery and Jim Crow, of the display. But again, you see, if we as a people have a mentality and a behavior pattern that even allows the enemy to come in among us unafraid and kill us, then the same kind of behavior allows us to stand there. See, there shouldn't even be yellow tape around us. You got to stand around a period of time as it passed for that to occur. But all of it is rooted in the failure to accept Allah's choice for us. Because
that's
as
right.
Everyone has said tonight, separation is the best and only solution. And what happens
right.
is our emotional, mental, and spiritual energy is drained in having to even ponder over these issues.
Right.
See, white people don't go out of their house thinking about what we think about in the morning.
That's right.
You know, police pull a white boy over. Yeah, he's annoyed. What are you stopping me for?
That's right.
What do you want? What do you want? And show up in the white neighborhood. Who called you? What do you? You know, you're lowering our real estate values. What are you doing in my driveway? Get out of here.
And you work for me.
You work exactly. It's a mindset. And it can only be overcome by submitting to the guidance that Allah is giving. Because we got to be guided out of this. We're not going to come out of this on our own. But the knowledge is present. The example is present. The way is clear now. As Quran said, the way, the right way and the wrong way are distinct. They are clear. And when we refuse to follow them, that's how we end up so powerless. We
yes.
cannot pick up our dead child. I've
right.
seen animals drag their dead away.
Hmm.
They grab them
yes,
by the cheek and pull them off the road.
That.
You know? So we're so, that's death when you don't even
right.
follow your instinct.
That's right.
Because that's all it requires is instinct, that this is a member of your own species. So animals mourn. You know, they stand over their dead and howl. We walk the other way.
Well, like you said, Minister Ava, you know, we are the only one who allow our children to be taught by the other species. So, you know,
well,
like Minister Farrakhan said, he has made us into himself. So we see each other the way the enemy sees
see us.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we are made into them. So we have to be unmade from them. But if we reject it and we are using the power of our dead God self to stay a nigger, he made us that, and now it's hard for us to break through to each other because we're so hard and so powerful, it's hard to break through the shell that he has made for us, that we have taken to be us itself, and it's hard to get through that. So that's why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has the hardest job of any man ever on the planet, is to turn God back into himself.
Hmm. You know, that's absolutely correct. There is no other answer now. So our big impediment at this point, as was demonstrated in the fight against apartheid in South Africa, you know, Sister Winnie Mandela and the tire necklaces, you know, whatever it takes to convince
That's right.
these people to stand down. And I was thinking about it earlier today. You know, we don't have to go out and do harm to anybody. We just have to obey God ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If we follow God's man and stop following these fake enemy-made leaders, the enemy will get rid of them.
That's right.
Because they're only paid and put in front of us if they're effective.
Right.
And this is why our youth are so angry and bitter toward us, because they have watched us comply with this craziness. And then they say, you bow down to the enemy, and then you want me to follow your instructions? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So we're down to about 12 minutes. We're going to try to get a couple of calls in here. Brother Hoyle, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum,
welcome back.
I want to apologize. Last week I didn't know the mute was on. I just want to apologize, but I want to congratulate you for excellent speech, and give my greetings to everybody, to Brother Shad and Brother Dr. Ridgely and the flight lieutenant right there. Yes, sir. But I wanted to interject. You know, all of the comments were very beautiful. I wanted to say with this, you know, we're looking at this Zionist technology. You know, we're looking at this ISIS situation. I was reading up on some articles on how, you know, they're being trained, you know, by the United States, Israel. You know, we can go to that verse in the Quran, when an unrighteous person brings you news, look carefully into it. You know, we've all been bombarded by Al-Qaeda, ISIS, all these propaganda techniques to throw our people off and don't see the bigger picture. Like you say, like Dr. Ridgely was saying, the same thing that's going to happen in Palestine is really happening here. The troops being, the police department being trained by Israeli troops. So now you're looking at a whole big lie with this ISIS situation, which is being thrown in our face. We got to really watch that, because that's another propaganda thing. If you look at it, there's stories on how they, you know, Israel, Britain, United States, and all of this has been thrown in our face, you know, in several different ways. But
yes,
this is going to force us to come together. And, you know, I mean, we're living in the belly of the beast. We're just looking at it. We're just living in the belly of the beast.
Yes, sir. And it's unfortunate it's taking all this. And we haven't gotten everybody yet, but it's unfortunate. We just couldn't listen and couldn't accept God's mercy, that we got to get slaughtered before we'll bear witness.
You know, you made an analogy about the sheeple, you know, and it's a shame. You know, we just sit there and allow, you know, our dead it was a situation here in Memphis where a brother went up and shot, killed his wife right up there in the daycare, just blew her away, you know. And then they say he shot himself. I don't, you know, every time, you know, if it's a black man killed, you know, I don't like the situation where he killed his wife, but, you know, it's always, you know, he being shot himself, you know.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, if the police have anything to do with it. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do. Like the minister said,
that's
we just
right.
got to
and
unite.
Quickly.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
but I'm going to let it,
thank
I know
you.
You're winding down, and assalamu alaikum, my sister.
Alaikum salam. Thank you so much, Brother Hoyle. And, brothers, I want to come to an end on the international piece because you all have alluded to it, and I don't want it to get past us that if you're paying attention to the news now, the move is very quickly being turned toward the so-called domestic Muslim. I saw a couple of weeks ago some man of questionable ethnic origin who claimed to be black and said that he had been converted. Now they don't say Nation of Islam yet. Always very careful to lay a base for everything.
That's right.
But he said he became a Muslim here in America, okay, in the 90s. And then he said, and he said that once he converted to Islam, he stopped identifying with America and began identifying with people in the Middle East and with the Muslims overseas, and he no longer considered himself an American. But when 9/11 took place, he realized, and I'm paraphrasing, but he realized he was in the wrong religion. And after that, not only did he leave Islam, he went to work for the CIA or NSA, somebody. And for a few years, he was undercover. So, see, you'll see him again in the near future. Then you have
he's on every show now. He's on
it. Mhm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's on every daytime show. He's the one being shipped around to all the different shows as a former radicalized Muslim.
Radicalized Muslim. That's the term.
That's right.
A radicalized Muslim. And so you have him, you have the brother that was joined ISIS allegedly and was killed. So the spotlight is turning on Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, Sean Hannity, all the little Fox shows are starting in again on us. But that is ultimately, and I think you said it, Brother Ashad, black equals criminal, Muslim equals terrorist. And then at the top of all this, they're gearing up for war with Russia. They need a war with a major power, okay? If not Russia, then at a minimum Iran, because invading the lesser nations and just massacring them and killing their leaders, it didn't get the traction with the public that they wanted. And in order to be able to come up with sedition and these sorts of charges, they need to be engaged in what the American people consider a real war. And that is why USA Today, I think the front page has, is there any way to stop Russia? From what? You know, from doing what? But every where we turn, there is a move toward another world war, which is really a war with Allah.
That's right. And as deep what you said, Sister Ava, this whole issue of Islam and that's going on in the overseas. But my uncle said something to me today. He always watching news. He said, "You know what?" He said, "Ultimately, it's going to come down to Christianity or Islam. Christianity or Islam.
Right.
And for him to be in the house, he doesn't go out. He was in the acid. He just stays in the house. This is his best form of information, unless he go out to the store, get something to eat. But he's feeding off the television. And for him to come to that conclusion, then that makes me understand that his mind is getting shaped by what he's seeing, and that's what he came up with. And that's very deep to me.
And of course, we know that ISIS, like Al-Qaeda, like the Taliban, these are all groups that initially were funded and functioned on behalf of the U.S. government. And I heard, maybe you all knew this before, you probably did, I heard today for the first time that Al-Qaeda, the name Al-Qaeda, it was made up by a U.S. corporation, and that Osama bin Laden just decided he liked it. That Al-Qaeda, which means the base, originally was a term employed by a U.S. corporation. And so with ISIS, which is connected with Al-Qaeda, these are groups, you know, where similar to the way the FBI came in among black organizations.
Right. That's right.
You know, and would pay people to be enemies to their own. And then when they were done with them, they would turn against them.
Yep.
And make them the enemies. So the approach is the same.
Well, you know, I heard on the news, I thought this was interesting. Yesterday, they said that a lot of recruits in England for ISIS, and they said that these people who were recruited by ISIS would eventually come back to England. So they said that ISIS will be in England a month from now, and then a month after that, ISIS will be in America. I mean, how do you know this by the month unless you got the playbook?
Precisely.
Yeah. And I heard Barack Obama, he described it originally, you know, ISIL was talked about as being a minor figure. And now they've gone from being the minor figure to, like, the top-level championship terrorism group. So, you know, we just have to, you know, we have to make sure that the main thing I always think about is connecting the dots. And, you know, Americans have such a short institutional memory, but all we have to do is connect the dots. It's the same playbook, and they keep on doing it. And I'm so thankful that we follow those who are keeping the information out in front of the people, keeping it out in front of the people so that we can continue to inform our people. Information is going to help, but you also have to act on that information you have.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, I really am very grateful, and I know all of the callers and listeners are too. And those that we weren't able to get in, just call early as you can every Thursday. And, of course, at Ask Dr. Ava, along with my esteemed panel and esteemed guests that join us from time to time, we had an excellent program this past Sunday in WVON. I do want to note, and I meant to mention this earlier, Brother Ashad, that a retired Chicago police officer called us because I had asked for someone to give me an incident where a black officer shot a white teenager and thought he was armed and he wasn't. Of course, there is no case, but the brother said the closest thing I have to that is, he said, yeah, there was a black officer in Park Forest, which is a suburb of Chicago, who, at the direction of his supervisor, shot a 95-year-old white male who was holding a knife, shot him with a beanbag, not a bullet, a beanbag. Later, the 95-year-old died, and at the insistence of his family, this black officer has been charged with murder in the second degree, felony murder, and so we're going to be following that case. But that's what happens when you're a black cop, okay?
That's
so
right.
Thank you, panel. Thank you, Brother Ashad, Dr. Ridley, Brother Terrence, Sister LaDonna, all of the members of the Elevated Places team for all that you do.
Thank you for listening.
And, of course, the listeners. And may Allah bless us with love, life, and success, and we'll hopefully
be
with you next
week. Here. Every Thursday at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. If you have enjoyed our show today, please bookmark Elevated Places as one of your favorites. And remember, we are all preparing for a brand new world.